Good day, Internet.
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 God, everybody's having the best day.
Woohoo.
All right, let's do some tech news.
Yes.
Here we go. In 3, 2. Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Michelle Sergiu, Miss Music Teacher, and James C. Smith. Coming up on DTNS, is algorithmically generated content creating too much content? Plus, we have the future of automated trucking, and Andrea Jones-Roy is back to help us figure out how we can safely use all of those algorithms we're talking about. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, December 5th, 2022 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from the Atlanta area, I'm Nika Montford.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Sarah Lane has the day off, but Andrea Jones-Roy, data scientist, comedian, circus performer, and host of Majoring in Everything podcast is back. Welcome back, Andrea.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you. We are going to talk lots of AI and data science today. It is full of those wonderful topics.
That's how you kick a week off.
That's right. Right. Going into Monday, strong. Let's start with the quick hits. U.S. District Judge Anne Donnelly in Brooklyn dismissed an indictment against Huawei CFO Meng-Wang Zhou, which alleged her of crimes relating to misleading banks about Huawei's relationship with a company operating in Iran. Meng reached an agreement with U.S. prosecutors last year for the case to be dismissed 4 years after her initial arrest in Canada, acknowledging she made false statements about Huawei's Iran business. The case was dismissed with prejudice, so it cannot be brought again.
Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo reports that Apple's mixed reality headset may be delayed until the second half of 2023 due to, quote, software-related issues. Kuo previously reported that his sources indicated Apple would announce the headset in January with shipments starting in Q2.
Journalist Matt Taibbi published a tweet thread detailing how Twitter's trust and safety team determined to temporarily block the 2020 New York Post story that involved descriptions of the contents of Hunter Biden's laptop. That story came out ahead of the U.S. presidential election that year. Twitter provided emails which showed the team debating internally whether to restrict the links to the story under its hacked materials policy. So not about the content or veracity of the story, but whether they were doxing Hunter Biden. Then CEO Jack Dorsey was not involved in the decision, at least according to these emails. And Taibbi said he did not see evidence of, quote, any government involvement in the laptop story. Emails largely agree with recent statements on the decision from Twitter's former head of trust and safety, Yoel Roth.
Lots of people are leaving Salesforce. Co-CEO Bret Taylor announced his resignation last week, as did Tableau CEO Mark Nelson. Now, Slack founder and CEO Stuart Butterfield says he's leaving in January. Butterfield joined Salesforce when it bought Slack for $27 billion in 2020. Salesforce GM of Digital Experiences Cloud, Lee Diane Jones, will take over as CEO. So, Salesforce saw 3 different CEOs resign in the last 7 years.
Yeah, or seven days.
7 days.
I was going to say 7 days. That might be
seven
some kind of record.
Days.
Yeah.
I mean, even 7 years is quick, but yeah.
That's a good point. Back in June, Meta began testing age verification tools on Instagram. They included things like taking a video selfie, getting a vouching from an adult friend, providing a state ID. Those tools were offered in partnership with the digital identity startup Yoti. And now Meta will expand the tools to be used on its Facebook dating service when it suspects a user may have lied about their age. Meta says on Instagram, the tools stopped 96% of teens who tried to edit their birthdays to be over 18, and that 81% of users opted to use a video selfie for the verification. All right, let's talk a little bit more about all this algorithmically generated content. As algorithmically generated content becomes commonplace, we've talked a little bit about the first policy experiments on how to treat it. Stock Image Stalwart Getty Images, for example, does not allow contributions from generative AI or text-to-image generators to be used on its platforms. They say the legal risks from copyrighted works and training sets is undetermined, so they'd rather just, you know, be safe and not allow those to be sold. Adobe, on the other hand, opened its stock image service to images made with generative AI, and to deal with the legal implications that are still fuzzy, creators must affirm that they have the appropriate rights to the work being submitted, and that the work will be labeled as made by AI when you're searching for images on Adobe's platform.
But algorithms aren't just making images. PenAI just released its ChatGPT tool, which can create text from a variety of prompts, including code. So now the coding Q&A site Stack Overflow has temporarily banned users from sharing responses generated by OpenAI's ChatGPT. This ban isn't, however, a result of legal concerns like with Getty, but rather quality.
Yeah, it's a mod problem. The mods say ChatGPT produces code that has, quote, a high rate of being incorrect, even if the code might look good at first glance. If Stack Overflow believes a user has used ChatGPT, it's going to take measures to prevent that user from continuing to post it, although it's not clear what that might entail. For now, the rule is temporary. Stack Overflow is just trying to stem the tide because ChatGPT launched, and of course, everybody's using it, so everybody's posting code from it. They'll make the final ruling on ChatGPT responses after consulting with its community. A lot of this topic touches on things we're going to talk with Andrea about later, but I'm curious, Andrea, what you make of this particular story.
I mean, my main selfish takeaway is I'm a professor of data science, and now do I need to look for my students' code being generated by AI? The answer is yes, because they're very crafty. and so I anticipate that this is going to be a big problem. I am not surprised that the code that's coming out is not great. I imagine that the way to think about it is, you know, AI generated text from that's supposed to be on behalf of humans in some cases is very, very good, but it probably in this particular case looks more like the kind of chatbots if you're trying to like text with your airline and it starts off okay and then you're like, I don't think I'm talking to a human. I'm pretty sure the code looks like that as well, but it does pose a really big problem. And then the last thing I'm thinking about is on this front as far as what comes to mind first is it's kind of like a Turing test squared or a Turing test of a Turing test, right? Like we want to see if the computer can imitate a human, but now we're asking the computer to imitate a human talking to a computer. And it kind of poses a big philosophical problem as well. And I think it's a huge breakthrough, but there's a lot to work out. And frankly, I'm calmed that Stack Overflow is like, let's just take a minute and see what's going on before we do anything.
Let's try to put a break on that. Nika, do you code anymore or do you just let AI do it for you now?
Oh, no, unfortunately, I have to do a lot of it myself still. But I think Andrea is spot on, especially on the student front. Students are crafty. And I think what Stack Overflow is doing is honestly trying to protect their brand. They don't want a bunch of junk code on their site. People going to look up, you know, if they hit an error, they're looking for some help to get some junk code and start saying, hey, I pulled this from Stack Overflow and it was crap. So I think it's probably a bit of branding, brand awareness, and making sure that, you know, they don't get a lot of junk on their site as well.
Yeah. To me, I look at this and I say, okay, I try to back up and I'm like, humans also put bad code in. So Stack Overflow doesn't want bad code from humans anymore than it wants it from ChatGPT. So what's the difference? And the difference is scale. Stack Overflow has had a long time to get used to just about how much bad code might show up from a human in the course of any given day and assign moderators appropriately. ChatGPT suddenly made it possible for humans to be posting way more code than they could generate themselves because they can just let ChatGPT go to town. And there's a little bit of like, hey, I've got a new toy, so let me make it do the thing and then post it somewhere. I mean, we've seen the same effect on Twitter where everybody's posting screenshots, including myself. I'm totally guilty of that, of like, hey, this is the funny thing I made ChatGPT do. So I think two things. One is the amount of this is probably going to recede, which is why it's very wise that Stack Overflow said, temporarily doing this, but we're going to see what happens once everything settles down to like actually create our policy. Yeah. So there you go, Stack Overflow. Free advice from us. You're doing the right thing. Not that you needed to be told that.
Right. All right.
Last week, Joanna Glazer wrote an article for Crunchbase about autonomous trucking company Embark, which has seen a 98% stock decline since it went public in November 2021. It's currently valued lower than its cash reserves, literally less than nothing. Like it, when you're valued lower than your cash, that means you have negative value. Now, there's lots of factors combining to bring down Embark's value, including the general downturn in tech. But the main problem seems to be confidence in the product, autonomous trucking. Starsky Robotics, Peloton Technology, which is the trucking Peloton, which is not the same as the workout bike Peloton, and Ford-backed Argo AI are all involved in autonomous trucking, or were, because all of the ones I just mentioned have shut down. Another company called TuSimple, T-U-S-I-M-P-L-E, is still going, but it also is trading below its cash value like Embark. The question is, why? After all, autonomous trucking is supposed to be easier to do than personal driving on city streets, because autonomous trucking happens mostly on highways. Trucking was expected to be the easy win for automated vehicle companies.
To be clear, Embark hasn't given up. It still says it's on track to begin commercial operations in 2024. It currently has 9 transfer points in its coverage map, including Dallas, El Paso, Atlanta, and Jacksonville. Is it all bluster, or are all the investors just being a little bit impatient? The Verge talked to Cornell Associate Professor of Information Science, Karen Levy, about it in an interview titled, Why Automating Trucks is Harder Than You Think.
Yeah. Most of that interview is about the surveillance of drivers, which is an interesting topic. You absolutely should read it for that. But for our topic purposes here, Professor Levy weighed in on autonomous driving. She thinks autonomous trucking might be possible in like 40 years. But in the meantime, she's convinced, after talking to a lot of truckers for a book she wrote, that we need the humans, that humans have to stop several times a day to do safety checks. They look at things like frayed ties, make sure the refrigeration system is working properly. If you got to keep something cool, signs that a tire might be about to blow that maybe a sensor could catch, maybe they wouldn't. Humans also provide security to make sure somebody's not trying to break into that truck. Now, obviously, some of these procedures can be automated. You can put security systems on a truck. They may or may not be as good or better than a human, but not all of these things are replaceable. And the momentum, as we just heard, seems to be against autonomous trucking as a business right now. Even Tesla, when they announced the Tesla semis, didn't announce enhanced autopilot last week. When they first announced the Tesla semis back in 2017, they at least had a slide about it. The equipment is all still there to do it, but they just didn't see fit to make that a big deal. Nika, I know you work in a related industry on driver assistance systems. Where do you fall on expectations regarding autonomous trucking?
Well, I know it's hard enough teaching vehicles, consumer vehicles, how to drive on interstates, on streets. I could only imagine the additional level of complexity that goes in with these commercial vehicles. You have to also take into account not only just the safety, of the truck and the person in it and the cargo, but you also have to think about all the other drivers and all the other barriers. With these commercial trucks, you have to stop periodically whenever you see a weigh station to weigh the cargo. And additionally, just the amount of camera and sensors that you need on a consumer vehicle, just a car that you would normally drive, it would have to be, exponentially greater. The sensors would have to be even better and more just to fit around a vehicle as large as, say, an 18-wheeler. Because if you think about as a person driving a car, when you look in your mirror and you see, a truck coming up behind you or beside you, you have to keep double checking just to make sure that you're still, in a safe space. I think that just adds the additional complexity into making sure that the truck is going to stay in its right lane, is going to make sure that it's going to be safe for the driver, is going to be safe for other people on the road. So it's a lot to take into account. Because like I said, teaching just a regular car to drive in these instances is extremely difficult and complex.
Andrea, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, what Nika just said made me think of the last time I rented a car. So I live in New York City and so almost never drive, but that means that I experience innovations in car technology in like a punctuated way every time I rent a car, and only on the occasions I happen to get a relatively new one. But it's those, you know, the lane correction ones where if you start to swerve, but then sometimes it can be not so safe because I'm trying to change lanes and it won't let me, and that sort of thing. And that's just little old me on the highway going not that fast. And call me old fashioned, but if I saw a huge tractor trailer coming behind me with no one at the wheel, I would not feel great. But look, I mean, there is a potential future where this could be safe, and I'm certainly open to it. And I know that we've had a lot of changes in air travel that has made it more safe with more automation, though with some very, very, very notable issues that made it extremely unsafe, cough, Boeing. But I also am finding myself thinking about something that I am going to say a little bit later about AI more generally, is that when you were first introducing this issue, I just learned more about trucking than I knew in my life going forward. I didn't know that they had to think about, you know, the cargo and the content and all that. Of course you would. It just never occurred to me that there was much more to it than driving, because I don't know the industry and I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. And that's one of the issues with AI generally, is that we need to partner with people who live and work and have real experience and expertise in the areas that we're trying to automate. So partnering with truckers is encouraging to me. And it sounds like we need to do a ton more of that, because as Nika said, there's tons and tons of micro decisions you're making all the time. And if you're an experienced driver, there's a lot that we would need to, the complexity becomes overwhelming when we think about training an algorithm to do that. And so partnering with humans, I think, will move everything forward, literally.
Yeah, I think one of the things that gets me about this story is that the tech has been demonstrated to work and to work safely. I think it's fair to address all the concerns that y'all are talking about, to keep human drivers on board as safety drivers in the meantime. But when you're talking about freeway driving, you have a very clear lane. You're staying in it for a long way. You've got controlled access, way easier than the weird streets of Boston or even San Francisco that these autonomous vehicles are conquering. So I'm not as down on the ability for it to be done safely, which leaves me wondering, is what is left out of this story? What else is going on here that causes investors to devalue it? Is it they're worried about regulation? I don't think they're worried about worker revolt, because trucking companies have a hard time filling all the slots right now. Like, they can't find enough. So if you keep human drivers, you can actually probably keep truckers employed for the most part. We got a lot of truckers in the audience, though, so I bet you've got a perspective on that. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com. I wonder if it's cost. I wonder if these things just aren't any cheaper to operate, especially if you have to have a safety driver on board, than it is to just run a regular freight business. Like, is the transition just too costly?
Well, Tom, I think you raise a good point. And I think there's also a potential cost, either in terms of lawsuits or at least in terms of public reputation. Because if, you know, suppose you have a truck driver AI system that is 90% great. And if you have truckers in the audience, please tell me what the overall safety records for humans is. Maybe it's 95. I don't know, right? But 90 is still pretty good. But what are the consequences of errors, right? We see, you know, ChatGPT, all this stuff where they're great, but it's not perfect. But if you get, you know, an artist-made AI or an AI-made art and it's not that great, there's no consequence. Whereas if you have AI do something really dangerous on a highway with a truck, it's really, really, really bad, even if it's just as accurate or more accurate than humans. There's a lot of, I think, understandable and I share it, skepticism of AI. And so if you use an autonomous vehicle, you need it to be way better than humans in order to not get lawsuits or complete loss of trust in your customers. And I think that cost and that fear is very real as well.
The Verge has the number. Real quick. I want to answer Andrea's question. The Verge has the number. 5,000 people die in crashes in U.S. related to trucking. That's 12% of all crash deaths. So if you said, yes, 5,000 people will die in autonomous truck driving accidents, people would freak out, even though that's the exact number that happens. Exactly. Go ahead, Nika. Sorry.
And I was going to say, in the work that I do, 90% would not pass. Yeah. It's so far below what our expectation is. It's nowhere near what it would need to be. And that's just for, you know, consumer vehicles. Even though our numbers are much higher, I would expect it would probably have to be at least what, you know, we expect in consumer vehicles on these, you know, big, mm-hmm. you know, truckers. And then again, on the cost, I definitely think that is a factor because, again, as I mentioned before, you have to have all this additional equipment that works along with the algorithms that's feeding it data. You have to have cameras all around this thing. So, you know, and you have to have large cameras because the standard, you know, LiDAR cameras that you may use on a vehicle is not going to work on, you know, an 18 wheeler.
Yeah. So the combination of having to be better than humans, you can't just be equal. You have to be better for public perception, yep. for liability reasons, with the cost of operation. I don't know. I feel like that might explain why these companies are getting so much resistance from investors who were previously very, very bullish on them because public sentiment is getting harder on these sorts of things. And the economy is not doing as well. So their ability to just kind of skate by until they profit, that runway is running short.
Well, I do imagine we're up for a very fun, if and when they do figure this out, some very fun reboots of like Breaking Bad and Mr. Robot, where you hack into these trucks and can move drugs around much more easily. So that's a whole other set of costs.
The return of the 70s sci-fi. Trucking disaster movie.
Stealing cargo is going to be maybe a little bit more easier.
Yeah. Or speed, but it's an AI bus.
Yeah. Eastbound and automated down. folks, if you have a better title for a show about trucking, email it to us. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. And of course, we want to hear from the truckers as well. feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. So the last time Andrea was here, we discussed the story in Vice called Scientists Increasingly Can't Explain How AI Works. We had a great conversation about the way algorithms work being a bit of a black box. You know what goes in, you know what the algorithm does, but we explained why you can't really tell how it makes its decisions. This time, we wanted to pick up that conversation and talk a little more about whether that's a problem, right? And what we can do about it if it is. If we can't tell how an algorithm makes its decision, Andrea, does that mean we just shouldn't use them?
I think it depends. I wish it were that simple. What if I was like, yes, goodbye.
Yeah. thank you. That's the end of Daily Tech News Show.
Nailed it. I think that it really matters on how serious the consequences are if your AI's model either makes a mistake or if otherwise, the decisions being made by this model really impact people's lives or whatever it is that we think is super important that it's impacting. You know, if AI is feeding me a certain set of targeted Instagrams, we could imagine a world where that could be really dangerous. And certainly we see this with YouTube rabbit holes to all kinds of scary content. But on the whole, I'm less worried that I don't really know how that works, though I am worried. I'm less worried than I am about things that make really important decisions that can really affect someone's life and their ability to survive and get by in the world. So things like their candidacy for parole, which is one of the big classic stories that's come out in this space, whether or not someone should be hired. We have, you know, Amazon reading resumes that way, whether or not we're giving someone a loan. These sorts of decisions are the ones that I, with a social science background, tend to think about a lot. And I think if you're making those sorts of decisions and you can demonstrate that there are outcomes that are biased and there are ways, and we talked a little bit last time that there are some ways to check it, not always, but there are some ways to start to get a sense of whether or not your algorithm is biased, then I think we do need to know how it's working. Asterisk, also, if we want to just understand the world better and not just predict stuff, but really explain how things connect to one another, then we also might, from a philosophical scientific curiosity, want to know how they work.
Yeah, it seems to me, and tell me if this makes sense, that the solution isn't not using algorithms. The solution is doing what we're doing here, right? Learning what the limitations are, what the imperfections are, how they go wrong, and understanding that you can't just put a question in and rely on the answer. These are advisory tools.
Right. And again, even if you say you put in a question into you know, the code automation program of your choice, and it generates a whole bunch of code, and 90% of the time that code is right, fun, great, you do well on your homework. But if that's code that's going to then, you know, impact people's lives, those are 10 people who are not getting hired, not getting parole, not getting approved for a mortgage, or other sorts of things that could really impact their lives and their health and their ability to make money and all that stuff. And so the ship has sailed on algorithms. It would be very, very difficult to go out and say, I don't think we should use them. I think that we should. In many cases, algorithms are outperforming humans in some medical diagnostics and other areas. Like, let's go. But it's exactly what you all are talking about, which is we have to be aware that this is not the same thing as capital T truth, that I talk about this a lot, right? That the data itself is biased. We're training the algorithms on that biased data. And then because we think that it's somehow true and unbiased and objective, we're implementing it without even giving it any thought. We're not being very critical of the predictions. If the algorithm says hire this person and don't hire that person, we say, well, it must be objective. So it's biased every step of the way. But indeed, I'm excited to be back because there are some things we can do in addition to awareness, though I'll be honest with you, I think that's the biggest one because so few people are aware of the limitations. And a lot of it is because it's come out in the last 10 years. So unless you took a data science ethics course in college, which is true for very few of us, you probably don't have access to much information on a daily basis about this, except for if you watch Daily Tech News Show.
Of course. Or listen to Andrea.
There you go. Yeah. I'm always ranting on some street corner. So there's that.
Yeah. And I think AI is definitely here to stay. But I think people can't miss the fact that human interaction is necessary. I think when people hear things like artificial intelligence or machine learning, they just hear, let me put something in something and hear boop, beep, boop, 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 and splat, I get, you know, exactly what I want out. That's in that beep, boop, boop, boop. There's a lot that's going on in there to make sure that it's ethical, to make sure that it serves the greatest, you know, point of population, that it's safe, that bias is mitigated as much as possible. So I think once we get it into the ethos of society, what AI really should be doing, I think that's when we'll probably start to see a shift in the thinking behind AI. I think it really is, education to the masses behind it. And one of my best courses in college was an AI ethics class. It was the last class that I took before I graduated. And, the professor now is the dean of engineering at Ohio State, but it was one of the most fascinating, classes, because you do get to see how people can integrate biases and use data, manipulate data to get their specific point across. You can change the data to fit the narrative that you want, the same with algorithms as well. So it's one of those things where we have to make sure we don't take the human element out of it, and that we're consistently training and retraining to ensure that we get the best output possible.
Nika, I think your boop, 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 boop line is perfect. And I need to have you come in and talk to my students, because that's exactly it, right? We spend so much time in my class, and whenever you do any programming, you whiteboard the problem and you think about what it is that you want to do. You know how to interpret the results, but what goes into the actual model itself is absolutely touched by humans at every single step of the way as well. And I go through the code, line by line with my students for even a simple, supervised clustering algorithm or something like that. And a human is making choices. Yes, you could run the model with lots and lots of different specifications of those choices, but your training set size, the data you include in the first place, the type of model that you're using, the distance metric that you're, humans are making those decisions. And you could you could automate that, but you're still telling the computer how to automate it. So it's just, we've forgotten that humans are at the center of AI, whether we like it or not.
Yeah. Well, and it reminds me of astronomy in some ways, which is this astronomical model is going to tell me an approximation of this, which will help me, the astronomer, then figure out an answer. I don't just say, oh, the model gave me the answer. Same thing here. We need to get used to the idea that, first of all, you want to get your data set in as good a shape as possible, but know there will always be biases and be aware of what those might be, so that once the boop, boop, boop is done on the other end, you're not just saying, and there's the answer. You're like, okay, now we take it and we use it appropriately. Before we'll talk about this more on Good Day Internet, but before we wrap up the DTNS section of this, Andrea, do you have any recommendations of things that people who are interested in learning about this or in the industry can go to kind of work more on that?
Yeah, so there are a lot of resources and more every day, which is a great sign. Nika, your professor sounds awesome. I really like the work of one of my colleagues at NYU. Her name is Julia Stoyanovich, and she has a consortium of responsible data science and responsible AI that comes with a free online course. It has like five different modules, and if you go to, I think just Julia Stoyanovich, Stoyanovich, you'll find her resources. That's one of the best free online resources that I've found. And knowing to look for it, right? If you are seeing the results of any kind of AI out there in the world, whether it's art or whether it's various chatbots or whether it's the resource. There's a free course that's built in there under courses. And if you're interpreting, you know, do a Google image search and look up words like feminine or success, and you're going to get some really biased looking images. I mean, even that is how we're encountering these sorts of biases. So just as you know to look for it, you start to notice it everywhere around you, which again is depressing, but it can also be empowering. The other things that you can do is if you are working in a space that is AI related or you work near AI in your company's using AI in some way, make sure that there are humans on those teams, just like we were talking about with truckers. I would invest in the trucking company, the AI automated trucking company that is partnering 50-50, if not 60-40, with real human truckers, not the ones that are a bunch of engineers who are like, in principle, this is how it could work. Nothing against engineers, but make sure you've got humans every step of the way and make sure you've got humans from a diversity of backgrounds. And that means all the dimensions you can think of, and make sure you've got data that reflects all the people. I mean, lots of times if you look at things in social sciences, you see, oh, okay, we don't, you know, the algorithm isn't recommending any people of color. You go in and look at the data, and there's barely any people of color even in the data set you fed them in the first place. Yeah. So there's lots of places to look outside of the algorithm, as well as, of course, in the algorithm.
I think people always think race, gender, and those are important, but I'm glad you said, you know, all the different dimensions, rich and poor, rural and urban. Like, there, you need to have lots of different ways of looking at that. Andrea Jones-Roy, as always, thank you so much for chatting with us. If folks want to follow what you do, where should they go?
You can find me on all the social medias at Jones-Roy, J-O-N-E-S-R-O-O-Y, one word, and jonesroy.com.
Excellent. There's two O's in there. Don't forget
that. There's two O's.
Yeah.
That's on purpose. Sometimes people come up to me and they're like, someone spelled your name all wrong. You're like, oh no, my grandparents did. I don't know who did it, but someone did.
I like to think of it as you having a wealth of O's.
Yeah. I'm going to say that from now on. I like that. That's an episode title. No, that would be totally derailing.
it might be overpromising. Yeah. Nika, what have you got going on? Where should folks go to find out what you're doing these days?
I'm at Tech Savvy Diva on all the social media sites. You can also head on over to snobwestcast.com for our weekly tech show where we talk all things Apple and then some.
Thanks to our brand new bosses, Chris and Mahathir, who made this show possible. They started backing us on Patreon. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Mahathir. If you would like to be that like them, join the flood at dailytechnewsshow.com/Patreon. That's patreon.com/DTNS. Patrons, stick around for that extended show, Good Day Internet. We're going to carry on the conversation there. You can also catch the show live Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. You'll find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. Back tomorrow talking about the subscription model for car features. Does John C. Dvorak like it or not? Tune in and find out.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
All right. Great show, folks. If you've got a title and you're listening live, go to showabout.tv/DTNS2 and vote on the titles there. I also need to apologize to Nika for making a crack about the Cowboys in our private chat when we were discussing. It was just a generic football reference, but I know you follow the Cowboys, so I know it's specific.
And we've had a rough go already, so, you know, kick us lower down.
I'm sorry. It was too. I don't really even follow football that closely. So,
but Cowboys are an easy villain, right? Kind of like the Yankees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Excuse me, America's team?
America's team is always getting hated on.
How dare you?
So I did want to talk a little more that, you know, with extra time, because we always try to keep DTNS nice and tight for right. folks, you know, who don't have more than a half hour a day. But I want to pursue this idea that we were talking about, especially Nika, because you're working in an adjacent area all the time. And I was glad you brought up the courses that you took, because I feel like people think it's either or. It's either like, oh, the AI, it's magic and it will give us the answer. Just trust the AI. Or it's evil because it can be biased. You know, hold up your cross and spritz it with holy water and get
it. I have a lot of garlic here for that reason.
Get it away from me. And the fact is, I have always seen it and I continue to see it as like, it's a tool, and none of the tools we have in technology, especially software, have ever been great. This one's a little better at some things than other ones, but you know, it shouldn't be a shocker that it's like, oh, it's not perfect. It's not going to give us all the right answers if you have bad data going into it to begin with, or not even bad data. Falling into it. If your data isn't perfect, which it will never be, then it's never going to give you a perfect answer.
Right. Yeah. And the professor I was talking about is Dr. Ayanna Howard, who I mentioned is the Dean of Engineering at Ohio State University. So I took her class. That was the last class I took in my graduate school program. And again, I'd been in industry for years before, you know, I started on that track. And it's one of those things where it just, and I specifically was in the data space, it just gave me a different view. It gave me an expanded view of how the data that I manipulate, how I use for my work, how it can be easily taken and used for something, you know, either be used for something nefarious or used to specifically exclude certain groups of people to, you know, people to change or create or craft this particular story that they want to tell. And a lot of times people just hear these words, especially the way social media is now. It's just things just kind of get thrown around. Words get overused all the time. The meaning gets completely lost on the larger population, and people don't quite understand that, yes, it is an algorithmic, you know, system that does some of these things, but it has, it's human intervention all over. And I think, like Andrea said, you know, when you're choosing your data set, when you're choosing what to train on, if you're choosing from a data set that is missing a population of people, missing a certain area, it's you're starting off, you know, kind of at a loss there because you're not using a data set to encompass what our world actually looks like.
Yeah, I mean, and even one of the areas that I think is a good example of this kind of human intervention is labeled data. So anytime you're doing supervised machine learning, you're trying to predict some kind of tag, which means you need to have data that has some kind of label. So if I want to predict top performers, which I use in heavy quotes, at my company, or I want to predict whether or not someone has a disease, or I want to predict what, you know, whether or not someone is successful, I need to go in, or I need to get humans to go in and label those things. Or if I want to say, is this news, you know, left-leaning or right-leaning, humans usually have to go in and decide if it's left-leaning or right-leaning. And you might think, isn't there a way to automate that? And like, you could, but then you're introducing more bias. We say, okay, computer, if it uses words like hoax and stop the steal and whatever, then it's right-leaning. But we don't know if that's true. And even if we train it, we're still choosing which news outlets to give it in the first place. So it's exactly as both of you are saying, it's talked about like it's a yes or no, like we're either using AI or we're not. But it really, I think about it more as like, it's like literature. Some of it's awesome and beautiful and powerful. A lot of it's very problematic. And it's not like we're debating fiction, you know, like it's that broad, right? And it is human touched every single step of the way. And I have students who come to me when I teach this stuff, and they come to me and I'm so sympathetic to it. And they come and they say, well, how do I know which variables to include? How do I know what the threshold for accuracy is that I should choose? What percentage size should my training versus my test set be? And they're looking for, oh, it's 7, 62, 4. And it's just not the case. And statistics is uncertain. Our decision to use a mean or a median to motivate a policy decision, that's human motivated. And it gets, you know, with the black box, we lose sight of the humans that are in the beep, 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 as Mika said.
Is there hope?
I mean, the sun is setting during this conversation, so it's the world is answering for me right now.
Is there hope that you could say you could do auditing on an algorithm? I'm imagining a situation where it's like, okay, we've tried to get this data set as representative as possible, but it's like security. You can never get to 100%. And so we know that it's a black box, so we can't tell when it's going to go bad, but it's going to go bad sometimes. Can we just test it I think about things like electricity. We don't know how it works, but we've used it enough. Like, and people are like, oh, I know how electricity works. No, physicists don't know exactly how electricity works. They can't actually explain it. Go
I'm
look
still puzzled
that up.
By magnets myself. I don't get it. But yeah.
No, but like it's fascinating that we know so much around electricity, but there's still a mystery about how electricity is actually working once it's generated. But it doesn't matter because we know how to generate it and we know what to do with it on the other end. Is there a similar situation we could hope for with algorithms where like, yeah, it's going to be a black box, but we can set up these, you know, safety procedures to follow in order to make sure that, you know, we're getting the best result out of it and not shocking ourselves.
Right. Literally and figuratively and all the, well, the answer I think is along those lines, and it's as varied as the various safeguards we have in place for electricity. So there's certain ways that we set up an outlet in a home. I'm staring at my outlet where the plate fell off, which I guess is step one towards danger. So I'm not a good example, but then we have, you know, things in skyscrapers to keep them from getting overly ruined by lightning. So there's different solutions for different electricity sources or vessels. I think that the same is true for algorithms, and there is some work being done. I think not nearly at the same pace as algorithms are being developed and implemented. And there's rarely any requirement to have that unless there's something baked in where you like actually the company or whoever is building the algorithm bears the responsibility for those decisions. So one of the big issues around algorithmic accountability is whose fault is it? Is it the company as a whole? Is it the engineers? Is it something to do with someone who wasn't vetting it in the right way? And as we resolve that, there may be more incentives to check your algorithms. But for now, we're just counting on companies, researchers, whoever, to implement it themselves. And there are things you can look for. So some of the things you can do is you can say, all right, so in social science, you can say, generally, we don't put in the various protected categories or things that we don't want to select people based on. So we leave variables about race, age, gender, religion, as you said, Tom, rural or urban, all kinds of different sexual orientation. We leave those variables out. One way to check if your algorithm is biased is you can say, does my model actually predict outcomes that are like, can it predict the race of the people in my data set? And often you can, because you're including data that correlates with those sorts of things. So you're not putting in someone's age when they're applying for a job, but you're putting in, you know, information from their resume about what year they got their degree. And so even without the variables, you know, it's still, you're still triangulating those sorts of things, income, keywords that you're using or not using, and those sorts of things. So one way to check is kind of in this post-processing, am I predicting other outcomes that I am hoping to leave out? Another one you can do is, and this requires much more manual investment and messing with the program itself and making ethical decisions, which is I could say things like, am I disproportionately granting loans to particular groups. And I could go in as a researcher and change the threshold and say, I have to approve X percent of people from this group, X percent of people from that group. But that requires me going in and making that decision that that's what justice looks like in that particular case. And that can rub a lot of people the wrong way. So there are some serious mathematical, you know, barriers to, do I want the group outcome to be fair or the individual outcome to be fair? And you usually can't have both, but we're barely even looking at this most of the time.
Yeah.
I was going to say, and you have to factor in time. This is still relatively new technology. It's still in its infant stages. So as we learn more, we improve. It's one of those things where you just iterate upon iteration, you get better each and every time. And, you know, we have all this data because everything we do now is capturing data from every aspect of your life. And it's just, you know, it's just so much data. So it's one of those things where we have to learn as we go. I know that's, you know, not probably answer a lot of people want to hear, that's just the case that we are. And the technology itself is going so much faster than, you know, we have to put in the effort to make sure that it's safe, that it's fair, that it's accurate for everybody. And I think, you know, 20, 30 years from now, you know, these conversations, you know, we can look back on and say, you know what, you know, yeah, now it's a lot better. We still have ways to go, but it's a lot better than what it was.
Yeah, we're in the age of like cigarettes, you know, mid Mad Men, where we're like, we think this might be bad, but we're all still doing it. Like, I think we're there with algorithms and AI, where we're like, something's up, but let's keep going.
I don't.
When Barney Rubble is advertising an algorithm, we're in trouble.
Yeah, it's toasted. Like, oh god.
I love that analogy because it involves Mad Men. I don't love that analogy because I'm not sure there's a good use for cigarettes as there is for algorithms. I don't think algorithms are like, well, they're definitely going to kill you.
Like, but you look so cool.
Seatbelts. Look at seatbelts. You know, back in the day, you used to have the seatbelt that just kind of went across like the lap. Now you have seatbelts that go strapped across. Now you have airbags. Now you have, you know, safety headrests. You have all these things that you know, you just put a baby in the seat and strap it in, just take off driving and, you know, there you go. And now if you don't have a child in a specific type of car seat, you know, you can be arrested, fined, you know, all those things. Yeah.
No, that's a great analogy because cars originally didn't have seatbelts, right? At all. And that was a bad idea. And then we realized, you know what, we probably need some seatbelts. It doesn't mean we shouldn't drive cars at all. And yes, cars are still dangerous and there's negative externalities to cars that we didn't realize until later. And it's not like transportation is bad or anything on wheels is bad. We're still actually working that one out. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what is the proper use of a car and how best to operate it and what kind of engine to put inside of it. Are we even in the Model T stage of machine learning? I don't even know. Yeah.
I think we're just at the part where it's like Ford was like, we could do this really fast.
Yes.
He totally exploited that in a lot of ways. Yeah.
You can have any deep learning algorithm as long as it's a neural network. That's right. You know, Henry Ford famously said.
I mean, I'm glad you brought up the aspect of social sciences, because this reminds me a lot of social anthropology, where like when I was studying it, you know, the instructor was very clear. It's like, you have to understand that everything you think is true about how people live is really only reflective of the way you've lived your life, you know, in your whatever 25, 20, 23 years that you've been around. And so you don't automatically transpose that to a different culture, because you're making assumptions, even unconsciously, even if you try to like do that. And he says, one of the things you really need to do is have not just a diverse group of people, but constantly, not what's a better way of saying fact check, but, you know, to kind of constantly, you know, revalidate.
Validate.
Okay. Reality check, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't hate
because,
validate.
You know, you're going to come up with a lot of things that simply aren't true, because you assume that, well, everyone wears shoes, or everyone eats with utensils, or everyone has a family unit that's, you know, two parents and two kids, and that's it. And so it's like, you know, I mentioned this before with Tom. It's like, he was very adamant that we never use the term primitive, because primitive is a very loaded term when we're describing different cultural groups or social groups around the world, because that implies a level of sophistication. And you have to understand, it works for them. And so they don't need, you know, a remote control to work for a TV they don't have, because they don't spend their time watching TV. There's all these things you really need to kind of understand that doesn't exist just because it exists for you.
I think what we're pointing out here in this example, Roger, is that we have a discipline. It may be a much maligned discipline among the hard sciences.
Oh boy!
Of checking for people's biases, right? The key word there has been people up till now. We know how to run a study that tries to filter out people's biases and understand what's really going on with people, even though people are not going to self-report truthfully or faithfully. So it's weird to think, oh, we should do that with an algorithm, because up till now, algorithms have been like, oh no, it's an algorithm. I don't have to worry about it because it's a formula and I know exactly how it works. And in some ways, I look at this and I'm like, this is not a hard problem. The fact that an algorithm is a black box is new, but it's just that it's what Roger was saying. We expect algorithms to be not black boxes because they've always been not black boxes up until now. But we just have to get used to the fact like, oh, these are, and they're useful for things. So we kind of have to treat them like people and test them for their biases.
They are still a product of culture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. They're still stuck inside that insipid matrix.
I mean, when you go back to like the car thing, I mean, when they used to test car dummies, they tested for a very specific model, which was like a middle-aged guy that weighed, you know,
oh, sure, yeah, but there's biases in all kinds
and
of things.
And then over time, it's like, well, you know, there's different people, different weights.
Turns out.
Other heights.
Yeah, I mean, different things, body types.
Yep. One of the things you learn in design is that, you know, how you design a simple thing like a door, right? How do you design the handle? How you design the handle for someone who's standard, you know, 5 foot, 5 foot nine, you know, fully able to pull the door works one way. Doesn't work for someone in a wheelchair or someone who's maybe 4 foot seven. You know, you have all these things and you have to kind of recognize just because you can do it doesn't mean you can't. You know, it works for everyone else.
There's a limit at the other end, too. I think that's where some people get hung up. It's like, oh, so we have to design a door for every possible person that could ever exist. It's like, no, you just it's not that hard to include like a few more groups, you know, that are very common.
We could get a standard deviation away. And
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I saw this is the ultimate resource for data science news, is that I saw a post on TikTok some time ago. So the algorithm fed me this biased output, and now I'm going to spew it to all of you, given all my biases. But it was a really interesting post by someone whose name escapes me, talking about accommodating for and making places more accessible for particular groups, having unintended consequences of benefiting other groups. And so the example this person gave was we lowered curbs so that people with wheelchairs could make it onto curbs at various crosswalks. And early on when that was happening, people were like, well, that's a lot of change in our city and we don't need it. And how many people are really in wheelchairs and blah, blah, blah. But then it became widespread across the United States. I think it's required by law. And now there's tons of other benefits for it. So anytime you're carrying luggage or you're rolling something heavy or you're moving, for one example, or if you have a sprained ankle or you have a small dog or whatever it is. So tons and tons of people who we never anticipated would benefit from this sort of thing do. And I imagine there's a similar, I'm checking the height of my own doorknob. I'm like, is there a better height that would be better for more people? I mean,
I bet
my boyfriend's
much taller
than I am. There's
an algorithm we could run to determine optimal height. Yeah,
it's very interesting. Like, you know, one of the things I noticed when I was in Japan for 3 weeks was that everything's scaled down slightly small, even though when you look at it, it all looks very familiar. You just, like, for example, I went up to the garbage truck, and it's about 3/4 of the size of, like, a North American garbage truck. And it was just took me a while to kind of get used to the fact that I'm unusually big. You know, not just height-wise, but just width.
And that trash is smaller.
And well, trash is dropped off and picked up in a slightly different manner. Well,
it's what Rich was saying about it's culturally different, right? And so the sort of where does it end argument is where I hear a lot of people say. And it's like, it ends actually, if you try it, it ends much faster than you think. You know, before you hit, you know, edge cases that are singular, you'll be helping hundreds of thousands of people by just including a few more cases. And Andrea was saying, you're going to have unexpected benefits. We run into that all the time with accessibility stories in tech, where everybody's bored with the accessibility story until suddenly they realize what they as an abled person can do with that thing. Yep. Like, oh, that could benefit me. And then suddenly that feature takes off like crazy.
I use closed captioning all the time because I got noisy kids running around, you know, and it's, you know, I can hear perfectly well. But when I have two kids screaming in stereo, it's a little easier to follow along the news when, you know, I have, quote unquote, the closed captioning is hopefully correct, you know, is running underneath what I'm watching.
I just have to say, talking about intentionality in the designed world and like cultural, like hopelessly compromised cultural systems is like, whew, this is like a dream.
Yeah. Roger, I wrote down some of what you said. Everything you think is true about how you live only reflects how you've lived. I was like, that is such a good point. So, yeah. Rich, I'm right there with you.
I had an anthropology professor that was like, if you want to know like what you experience that isn't in some way like in contact with culture in some way, it's like your reflexes. That's literally virtually anything else, whether it's perception, like from perception of color we've talked about this before on GDI before, but like that is all culturally mitigated. So it doesn't mean that you can't recognize that. In a lot of instances you can, but then there's a lot of instances where it's so passive. It's so like literally like just how you use language, like literally not even how language is used, but like the role of like vocalization versus facial expression versus proximity is all so tied into culture that like you and ways that unless you are seeing a lot of different cultures, you like just will never even think about. It's I love it.
That's awesome.
It's the best.
No, I mean, it's nothing makes me, maybe I've said this on the show before, but nothing makes me more nervous than a person who says, yes, humans are biased, but not me. I'm rational. I'm logical. Like, oh gosh, like that's just, you wouldn't have survived as a human. We all have these biases built in.
It's a never ending battle to try to be rational, right?
Yeah.
It's not a state you exist in. It's a continuing effort. To counter your own biases. And I think a lot of times people think, oh, bias, you're accusing me. I'm like, no, maybe we just need another word. But bias just means you're human because it's what we've been talking about. We all have things that we assumed as we grew up are the way the world works. And some of them you can think back and you're like, oh, that was silly. I thought all houses were one story. And then one day I went over to a friend's house and they had a two-story house. And I realized houses could be two-story. Like simple things like that, you still have them. And I run into them every day where I'm like, oh, wow, I always thought this was true. And it's not always true, or it's not true for everyone or anything like that.
Here's a simple one that I lived recently, and Roger, you probably did in Japan as well, which is my bias to check which way I look if I'm crossing traffic.
Oh, God.
And I was in London, and I almost died 6 times a day, even though I knew I should look a different direction, and I would immediately, and then I would get confused, and then I would freak out, and then a huge bus would pass me. And I was like, every single time, I was like, I know that I have the bias. I know that I need to adjust my behavior, and the stakes are to not die. And I still couldn't overcome it.
It's weird because it's funny you mention that because at the time when my girlfriend was from Australia, she was doing that all the time. Mm. It's like, no, you're looking the wrong way because you're going to get steamrolled.
Yeah. Even with signs in London that say, look left, I was like, that can't be right. You're like, it just feels wrong. I can't.
But that entire experience burned in me. So when I visited her in Australia, I automatically just turned my head to the opposite direction. It's like,
oh, what are the ones? This is a minor one, but one of the ones that I always remember is in Korea. We soon learned that it's almost rude. I don't know if it's considered rude, but it's almost rude not to ask for the check when you're ready for it. To sit there politely like an American waiting for them to bring you the check is like, why are they still there? Don't they want the check? And like, I had to unlearn, you know, the usual behavior of, here asking for the check is like, I'm getting impatient. Why haven't you brought me the check? There it's like, that's what you do when you're done. You say, otherwise you're overstaying your welcome. I'm not going to bring you to the check until you ask for it. So
I've sat at restaurants for really long times in other countries for exactly that reason. I'm like, the service here is terrible. Like, no, I'm terrible.
And neither one of you are terrible. It's just a mismatch, right? It's just a miscommunication.
That's why you have those, is it Froder or Forders?
Foders.
Oh yeah. Foders. Yeah.
Lonely Planet.
How to behave.
What's the like Steve guy? Steve's guide?
Steve, not Steve Carell.
Steve Carell. I would read Steve Carell's guide. Love that.
No, that's Rick Steves, right?
Rick Steves. That's it. Yeah.
I read my boyfriend and I went to Iceland. I read his guide and I like how opinionated he is. There's a bit of like bias that you can welcome as long as you know you're getting it. Like he would be like, you can drive to this if you hate yourself, take the ferry. Like,
I mean,
but he knew.
I mean, that's a great thing. Like the best travelogue shows are the ones with an opinionated host.
Yeah.
And not the ones that are just, you know, very generic. Like you watch Anthony Bourdain because he rags on a bunch of things as he's going through. Like, you know, one time he was talking about Argentina. It's like, oh, it's great if you love beef, but what I wouldn't do for like a carrot or like a side of lettuce, you know, it's like it was funny because, you know, it reflects on him, but it also reflects on some things that as an American you would also sort of maybe understand.
I had a fun experience that I was thinking about the other day. I lived in China for a while and I was eating with a Chinese friend and she turned to me and she was like, you know, I really like American food, but I don't think I could eat it every day. And I was like, wow. All of us sit around and say the same thing about Chinese food when we're in America.
Yeah.
And it never occurred to me that you wouldn't.
Which
that you wouldn't. And I got sick of eating Chinese food every day. I was like, how do you people live like this? But it's just because what you're used to. And that doesn't mean it's right or wrong.
And you can train that. can unlearn those things and get to a point where you would where you're like, I don't know how I was able to eat the things I ate every day back in the day, because we're malleable people. When I think about objectivity, one of the greatest moments in my education, I was in an internship, and they had one of the hosts of All Things Considered. This is in like 1993, and Gwen Ifill, who at the time was the Washington correspondent for the New York Times, and they were speaking to us, and you know they did a great job telling us about all the things that you know they do, and then we got to ask questions, and I said, "Do you think it's possible to be objective?" Because I was reading a lot of Hunter S. Thompson at the time. And I was a snot-nosed little 20-something. And I said, do you think it's possible to be objective? And the All Things Considered host gave me a very national public radio answer of like, well, if you don't think you should be objective, you know, you might want to choose another line of work because we should always be endeavoring for objectivity. It wasn't wrong, but it was a little snotty, a little elitist. Gwen Ifill said, I agree we should always be trying to be objective, but I know that when I walk into a courtroom, the first thing I'm going to notice are the people who look like me. And I keep that in mind. And I will sometimes use that to inform my reporting. And sometimes I have to correct against it. And I went, that just always stuck with me. I was like, yes, that feels like wisdom right there. It's not don't be objective. It's not you're biased. It's like just know yourself well enough, you know.
Well, this makes me think of something I heard a colleague of mine in data science say, will remain unnamed, about bias in data. And he said something to the effect of like, you know, bias runs deep in all of us and it's very difficult to remove bias from humans. But the good news is we can remove it from data. And I was like, no we can't.
You probably can't. Because you have to be able to. Data.
Who gathered?
Yeah. And you have to be able to recognize the bias to say, for example, if I have a bunch of data on truck sizes, if I'm using trucks in Japan, I probably need to multiply by points of whatever. Yeah, right? That's a very silly example. But I was like, the data is from humans. Ah. And so this is like, professionals who are very highly regarded in data science are just like, you know, just weight the respondents differently. And then you'll know how people from different backgrounds are going to vote. And it just turns out it doesn't work that way.
Hmm. Yeah. It turns out in the end, data is Soylent Green. It's made of people.
Yes, indeed.
Delicious. You know what else people. Is made up of people?
The people who submitted titles into our Showbot. Yeah. Showbot.tv/DTNS2. Our top vote getter for the DTNS title was from Tid Gooby. Lies, damn lies, statistics, and AI. It's nice. A very popular title. I think we may have used it before, though, but still a good one. I also like Vunderbrats got junk in the AI trunk.
Yeah, that's awesome. Shout out to Zoe Brings Bacon, who I think I remember from the last time I was on here with boop, 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 boop. So that would have been my vote, Nika's quote.
We have nice looking code, but does it work?
That's great.
From Larry in Atlanta. And once the beep, boop, boop is done from Rick Storms.
Trucks need humans? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just we all need each other. Trucks, humans, cats, dogs. All right, Roger, what did we title DTNS?
We titled Larry in Atlanta's Nice Looking Code, But Does It Work?
Excellent. Nice. We have not titled Good Day Internet yet because it's not over yet, but we'll do that now. Our top vote getter is Andrea is armed with garlic.
Nice. I've actually, it's true. I have a ton of garlic over there and it's because I bought it like a month ago thinking I was going to cook and I haven't cooked. I do not cook. I don't like cooking. These are decorative only. So I have a ton of garlic.
You can make some garlic.
I'm gonna just.
I would fist bump you right now, but we're some ways away from each other.
Next time I'm on the show, I'm just gonna cut all the garlic up. I'm just gonna dice it during our whole conversation with no comment.
Just be frying it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Smell great.
I like. Is there hope? That's another good capital A hope.
Zoe thinks we should title it "Sorry About the Cowboys Joke," Nika.
It does feel appropriate.
Yeah. I'm still puzzled by magnets. Chaos ASL.
Nice.
I'm down to 20 algorithms a day from Batfink 2001.
Oh, the cigarettes analogy. Yeah. I get it.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That's awesome. These are so good. Everyone wears shoes. There we go. We're not sure if AI is good, but we're doing it anyway. That's
oh, that's great.
Is that the motto for this whole century? Yeah.
Is the character count too long on that, Roger?
It's kind of.
It probably is because it wraps. Yeah. Ah, it's so good though. No one.
We could just do not sure if AI is good, but doing it anyway. Little. Five characters less.
Does that get us into the...
Wait, well, are you
drop
rewriting?
Weird. We just take out, saying, we if take we out drop the weird. Weird. Does that get us...
Oh, yeah.
Not good. Not sure if AI is good, but doing it anyway.
Yeah, I can do it. Yeah, give it a DOIN. Sure.
Yeah, maybe? Sure. We'll make it fit.
All right.
Use an at symbol. I don't know if that helps.
Thank you, GPEG84. We'll just do shorthand.
Yeah.
Sure, what is that? Character set for it somewhere.
If anyone asks, it was made by GPT.
Yeah, we actually should have just asked the chatbot.
GPT, please.
Yeah.
What should we name Daily Tech News Show today? Thank you, everybody who supports us on Patreon. Lawn Makes just went yearly. Oh, actually, no, was yearly and gave us a raise yearly. Thank you, Lawn Makes. Appreciate that. Also, Rizel gave us a raise as well. Thank you for that, Rizel. And thank you, everybody who supports us on Twitch, twitch.tv/goodday internet. Brian M64 just gave us some bits. So did Josh Llama. Zoe Brings Bacon. Loki Robert gave out 5 community subscription gifts. Dr. Nixon back for the 32nd month with Prime. Loki Robert gave us some gifts. Stoic Squirrel at tier 1 for the 40th month. Psycho Motors for the 34th month. Beatmaster 80 for the 43rd month. Gosh, I've been doing this a long time. Zoe Brings Bacon for the 43rd month as well. And Loki Robert with some more bits. Thanks to some new followers, Kenan Tuckwila, Flavor Nesto, Bell Marat, and Nightmare 34 God. Thank you all for being here. Thank you again, Andrea, for being here as well.
Thanks for having me. Always great to come and chat with you all. And I can't promise I'll become a Cowboys fan, but I'll say nicer things about them going forward.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah.
And Nika, hopefully you'll come back again if we promise that.
I'm actually on Friday, I think.
Oh, look, see? Yes. It works.
There we go. Yeah,
she'll be in our predictions results.
Oh, right. So people won't hear that until later. Look for the...
Oh, yeah, because that's end of year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Look for the prediction results show later this year if we don't have Nika before. Until tomorrow, everyone. John C. Dvorak's supposed to be here. Will he show up? What will he think of car subscription features? Find out. twitch.tv/goodday internet, patreon.com/DTNS. Have a good day, everybody.
Have a good day.
Have a super sparkly day.